Let's play some Pathfinder, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Echo Quest. We're back.
Yeah.
Right. Which game is this?
What are we doing?
Yeah. We are playing a little Pathfinder Second Edition.
Oh, man.
With some good friends in the dead of winter. It's snowing outside. And it's a very special day today, the day this podcast releases. Unless you don't give a shit about Valentine's Day. I don't know where you guys lie on this, but this episode is going to release on Valentine's Day.
Get out of here.
Today's Valentine's Day?
Today is Valentine's Day. And I'm curious, because it seems to be a kind of polarizing holiday. Some people are like, fuck Valentine's Day. Some people are like, it totally embrace the holiday spirit. I got to be honest, I'm curious about Troy, because he really is a big holiday guy.
A big holiday
But he
guy.
Also, like, if he decides he, like, partially dislikes something, it drops off a cliff to pure hatred. And we'll just not have any part of it at all. Where do you stand on Valentine's
There's
Day?
There's no ambivalence in Troy's mythology at all.
There isn't. There's no gray area, as we heard before.
He's not a shades of gray kind of guy.
No. Well, Joe, if you're in a loving marriage like mine, every day is Valentine's Day.
Wow.
Something you wouldn't understand because your wife thinks you're a fool and married you out of sadness.
I got to tell you about a fight my wife
it was
and
a
had
pity wedding.
A little later.
I remember I had a whole paragraph of the ceremony dedicated to how this was all born out of pity.
And by the way, Skid was the celebrant at my wedding.
I remember, right.
Yes. Oh, that's right. We talked about that in episode one.
Yeah.
I forgot that.
It was so long ago.
So you don't do anything?
No. We don't make a big deal out of it, but we'll do a little something. That's
do you buy each other presents, or do you say no presents at Valentine's Day?
You know what? We don't have a hard and fast rule on it. I think some years it's like, we doing presents this year? And I'll be like, you know we are. Hop on Amazon.
I've had your present for months, honey. For weeks.
Yeah, you know, we'll try to do a dinner, but now with a baby, it's like you can't really do anything.
Right.
Ever.
Right.
So.
You just hang out. I think the last Valentine's Day, I'm pretty sure my wife and I ordered in Indian and watched a movie.
Nice.
And we were like, what do we want to do more than anything in the world?
Yes.
Order in Indian and watch a movie. It's like the best possible thing. Kaya, your thoughts on Valentine's Day?
I think I'm a big fan of not just Valentine's Day, but also doing the whole Galentine's Day celebration,
which
is, of course, this day that was like born of Parks and Recreation.
Mm-hmm.
With Leslie Knope's character celebrating Galentine's Day, which is the day before Valentine's Day, where you celebrate like your female friends.
I usually do this
thing with like my female and bi friends, and bi is non-binary, where we'll just like, you go to brunch and like you buy each other little gifts and like you do, you know, the Instagram post about like this person's awesome because of et cetera reason and all that sort of stuff.
Uh-huh.
I like the general idea of like celebrating love as concept, but I've never really been like super intense on like
chocolates.
I have a single significant other and I want my giant teddy bear and we must go to like a something like that. That's a little uncomfortable for me.
The town fair.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
But you must win me the giant Snoopy.
Yes, all of that stuff. So yes, I'm a fan of the Valentine's concept of love and support and all of that sort of stuff.
Sydney? I saw you doing a lot of nodding at Galentine's Day.
No, I just agree with the idea that, like, the idea of celebrating love is nice, you know? Oh, guys, can I just say I love you guys?
This is the day to say it.
Yeah, this is a special Valentine's Day.
This is the best Valentine's Day ever.
Yeah, but...
we should make little bags to put on our laptops next year.
Yes.
Like, hey, and then we can all go around and put our Valentine's cards in them.
I like that idea. I love that.
A little bit of busy work.
You're already adding pressure to this holiday, though. Now it's like, who gets the most Valentines and who's loved the most?
It's not Valentine's Day if there isn't a stern edge of competition.
Existential dread.
Yeah, if somebody's feelings aren't mortally wounded,
that's not a proper Valentine's Day. Yeah, the whole like Hallmarky aspect where you have to buy people stuff and you have to do, that's like, whatever. All the prices are raised. Like, everybody goes out to eat on Valentine's Day. What a nightmare.
Yeah.
Stay in, order Indian food, watch a movie. That sounds great.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. What about you, Skid? I don't even have to ask, do I?
Well,
you think it's a fucking joke.
No, I don't. I liked the concept of Valentine's Day in Japan. Because on Valentine's Day in Japan, the women just buy the men the gifts. So, because I was like, they had to explain it to me. I was like,
holdover from samurai culture.
Yeah, no, I was like, really? That's what it is? Like, yeah, that's what it is. But it's like, oh, but there's a catch. because a month later in March, there's White Day. And on White Day, the man in the relationship is supposed to spend 2 to 3 times as much to buy a reciprocal gift for whoever got him a gift on Valentine's Day.
Oh, whoa.
But, interesting.
So basically, I should just buy something really nice so that I can expect something even really
expensive.
Yeah,
it's
going
to triple in value. It is. It's one of the most surefire investments you can make.
Buy a house. Yeah. He has to buy an island.
Good luck.
But that's the thing. If you're there on a visa, like I was, you're only there maybe for Valentine's Day. You're out of the country.
On White Day.
Yeah, just get free chocolates.
Oh, man. Well,
before we start, though, I want to ask, Sydney was laughing at something when we were in our moment of silence that we do before we I was wondering if she could share what she was laughing about.
I know exactly what she was laughing about.
I was laughing at Joe, who was laughing at me, because right before Joe was like, all right, everybody, let's get quiet, I took a huge bite of my croissant.
Like a giant
like
bite.
Like so big. And then he was like, get quiet. I tried to move away from the mic, and then I was like kind of choking on the croissant because I'm like, can you hear me chewing? And as I had that thought, I looked over at Joe just smiling at me.
See? Okay. This is pretty obscure reference, but I don't know, Skid, if you remember. Everybody seen X2? This is going back a ways.
X2.
X-Men
as in
2.
X gonna give it to you?
No. X-Men 2.
Oh, X2.
X-Men 2.
Oh, it's a phenomenal
yes,
movie.
Of course. Forever ago. Yeah, of course.
I saw it at Grauman's Chinese Theater.
So yeah, when the very, very beginning of the movie, when they're in the museum and oh my God, I
Bobby
forget his name.
Iceman.
Yeah, and Iceman starts the incident. Bobby starts the incident.
Yeah.
And then Charles Xavier comes in and freezes everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of what it looked like. I scanned over to Sydney and she'd like gone into slow-mo chewing until she completely stopped. And there was just a wad in her cheek and her lips like trying to not move. And then she started kind of coughing. It was pretty good. It was pretty good.
It was really funny.
All right. Dare you try to eat a croissant at showtime.
What is this, amateur hour?
All right. I'm satisfied. We can move on.
Good, good. Troy had mentioned my shaky marriage. And I do want to bring up a fight I had recently with my wife. I'm just curious.
You're
where you guys
yourself
stand
a hole,
this.
By the way.
This is not. It's a fake fight. It was really just a silly fight. She was trying to get her iCalendar to work with Google Calendar stuff in it, right? Like all the various calendars we have for all the various stuff that we do. And she's like, she's so frustrated on her phone. I can't get this thing to work. Like the iCal to sync with all this other stuff. And I was like, just use Google Calendar, the Google Calendar app. You know, like all of your. All of the calendars you use are Google calendars, right? All of them. And she's like, no, I have an iCalendar. Like for, and I'm like, no, you don't. I know that you use a Google calendar, and then we use a Google calendar, and then we have my work Google calendar, and you just try to import those onto this other program. And then, and she's like, basically the way that the fight, quote unquote, ended was her being like, no matter what, I will never go with just a regular Google Calendar app. I will force myself to port it into this other thing and like deal with all. So I'm just like, I don't know. Do you consider yourself a stubborn person, Sydney?
Hearing that
like
story,
where you're just like, no, like this way, I'm going to do it. I'm going to figure it out.
I think if nobody bothers me, I probably would change. Like I'd be like, oh, this isn't working. I'll just change it. But as soon as someone tells me what to do, where they're like, no, you just use, as soon as they say you do this, I'm like, no, I don't. Yeah. No, I fucking don't. And you don't know what I do. So I 100% I'm with your wife. Like I'd be like, I'm going to use 6 calendar apps now and you're never going to know what my plans
are. So I have to make it her idea to change it. Got it.
Reverse
like,
psychology.
What is this, the 1890s? I'm going to let my domineering husband tell me how to run my calendar.
It was just a suggestion to simplify the software. All right, let's get back. Let's get back to showtime. Oh, baby. You guys, last episode, you had started heading back to arenas. And I want to try to frame this accurately because it's kind of tough. It's kind of difficult because I think that there's a lot of metagaming that inevitably goes into anything that we say at this point as GMs with the Pathfinder system. It's just you play it a bunch. You start to read into certain things and you can think that something's a clue for this or a clue for that or whatever. And inevitably, you can sometimes miss out on the finer details. And really the finer detail here is the feeling that happens as you start to lose your familiar way back from where you had come. I just want to stress the sort of non-mechanical nature of what was happening, and make your characters realize and feel how uncomfortable it was and disconcerting that this seemed to be.
It's kind of a
happening.
Core theme in like every Grimm's fairy tale.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly. It is. It's the haunted forest sort of thing. Yeah. Like these exist in many fairy tales. It's something that it's one of the reasons I was drawn to this adventure even more deeply. Once I actually started reading it, you know, at first I'm just like, oh, it's just a dungeon crawl. But then once you start to get the fleshing out of Echo Wood, and once you read a supplement like Thorn Keep, you start to realize there's a real depth and interesting environment all around the spire as well. And it has a character of its own. And so there's really not much more to say on that, except I will say that you had done a perception, recall knowledge check about Faye. And what's interesting to me is the way that all went down was a secret check. And the fact that check was secret was really important. Really important. It made me realize why second edition is putting that trait in things like recall knowledge. It's so important for you to not know what the number was on that D20 for what the information was that you got. And so I think it's a good thing that we should keep trying to do rather than be like, oh, I know you like to roll your recall knowledge. Just roll them. There are times when it impacts the story and your character in an interesting way to have that secret check. In the rule book, there's a lot of secret checks now. And so it would get a little, I don't know, onerous. It would just get a lot of work on the GM to do this and take some of the fun of rolling dice out of the player's hands.
I think it's like, it's reflective more of the reality of the situation of secret checks, because you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's fun to roll dice.
Totally. And it says, in the rule book, you can make any secret check not secret.
Yeah.
You know, you can let the players roll it as long as you have players that you're confident are going to separate that player knowledge from their character knowledge.
It's funny, too, because I kind of forgot it was a secret check that I would either know or not know the information based if I had rolled the die. So when you were like, yeah, no, you know, it's not Faye. I was just like, OK, yeah, guys, it's not Faye. But really,
we don't know that we don't know.
No, we don't know that we don't know.
You don't know what you don't know.
Which it went over my head at the time because I was like, all right, yeah, Joe says it's not Faye, so we got to figure something else out. But
me
now,
too. Me too. Because I'm not used to making secret checks ever. But we don't do it in any other game. So, yeah, I was just like, oh, right. Okay.
Right.
Must be something else.
It absolutely can be right.
And we still don't know.
The point is, you're not 100% sure. You don't really know. And that's why I think it also takes away that element, which I love, of like, I roll my recall knowledge on, you know, let's say a few episodes ago, Soli had identified after some hard work this potion or whatever it is, an elixir of an antidote that was being brewed. And you just like, you know, where you roll and fail on it and somebody else is like, oh, I'll do my craft then. You know what I mean? And it's just like, they said that they don't know. Let's just let it lie rather than jumping in and trying to roll these things. I think secret checks help to mitigate that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So you get into this wood, starting to head back to Arenas to return her lockbox, which you found in the barracks of these makeshift barracks that these goblins had put up in their ruined fort. And you seem to be getting lost as you're heading back. You come across some skeletons that have not spotted you yet. Thanks to a natural 20 from Isoli on perception, she spots them through the brush, mentions it to the team. You guys come up with a great plan to ambush them. You do. You make short work of them, but not before. A few of you took a couple solid hits, and Eglador in particular is standing at one hit point. So we end with you guys littered bones all around you, and pretty weak, and the sun rapidly falling in the west. What do you do?
Well, I think we gotta make camp, right?
At this point, yes, I agree.
I need a rest.
Yeah, we're
for sure
badly beat up.
Do we want to? Can we, before we do anything, can we look at these skeletons and look at those markings that we kind of?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Saw
the crown on the skull.
They had a skull emblem on their helmets.
When they had emerald shards in them or something.
Yeah,
too?
That too.
Yes, emerald shards in their bones and a crowned skull on their foreheads.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So yeah, you examine the skulls that are now laying about this area. You look to the north. You look to the south down the path. You don't see anyone approaching. You look down, you grab one of these skulls, and yes, it seems carved, but not crudely, quite finely, into the foreheads, a crowned skull that has all the markings of a sigil. In this case, not so much a magical sigil like you had seen before in the spire, as much as a coat of arms or something of that nature.
Well, either we're dealing with a specific necromancer, or these are undead SS officers.
Yes.
And frankly,
one or the other.
I don't know which is more terrifying.
And then, yes, you found these emerald shards. So the emerald shards, you don't know if it was quite the reflection of the light that made it jump out to you as a little bit brighter, and maybe it's faded a little bit since they've been broken apart, but they do seem a little duller than they did when they were first walking through the ambush lane that you guys had created. But you do see, and there's not a lot of them. There might be, an average of, if you were to reassemble a skeleton, maybe four or five shards, the size of, I don't know, maybe an inch long or something like that. Four or five little shards implanted into the bones, one in a pelvis, one in a lower leg bone, one in a spine. They're just in all these different areas, these little
shards.
Do you
mean they just went to the spire and spent some time there? Or did they come from the spire?
Are the shards like the random ones that we found lying around inside the spire?
Like glass or stone?
Yeah.
They are more like stone. A little bit more like
The core.
The core,
central pillar.
The thing that you opened up. Yeah.
Oh.
They're a little bit more like that. But they seem to be, like I said, a little duller. But there is still, if you look close, is it a trick of the eye? There seems to be like a movement within them, of light.
Can I pull out one of them?
No, it's fused into the bone.
Okay.
I mean, you could
chisel it out
with the proper shoddy tools. Sully is a purveyor of shoddy tools in this party.
Shoddy tools.
Use your crafting skill. It works for that.
Just pull my robe aside to show my sets of shoddy tools and assorted gears.
So that's what you see. Nothing else particularly remarkable, and a recall knowledge check on these, on either the sigil or the shards, gains you nothing. You just don't know what you're looking at.
Well, it seems to me that it feels like someone is manipulating, repurposing the magic. Whatever it is, like, to be found in the middle of the spire, to do this.
Yeah.
But so that's interesting.
Yeah, I don't think these were like soldiers that maybe they do protect the spire. Maybe they're like marching around the area to keep people away or something.
Yeah, but then they have the symbol etched into their heads.
Yeah, like
too,
they answer to someone.
Yeah. Well, should we hide their bodies in the brush?
Maybe, like, I think...
Off the path?
I think Cleon, grabs a femur, with the shard sticking out of it, and tucks it into his bag.
Should we take the skull, maybe, to show Arena, if maybe she knows the symbol?
Yeah.
I guess we could describe the symbol, but do you want to...
But carrying skulls around is pretty cool, so let's let's grab a skull to do that.
And then you make camp?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Go off the path.
Under the tree or... Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Off the path.
Off the path.
Okay. So, you set a campfire. You set yourselves down for some much-needed rest. I'm assuming you're going to do some healing before you rest to catch up, at least Eglodora. I don't know where everybody else is. What is everybody else at ballpark for hit points?
I'm down 8.
I have 6 hit points left.
Oh, man.
I'm totally fine.
That's right. You stayed in the bush the whole time.
I was in the bushes.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, I could take an hour and just lay on hands, wait 10 minutes, lay on hands, wait 10 minutes before we rest.
And I could do some treat deadly wounds, too.
Okay. All right, so you guys can, through one method or another, get everybody up. But it's going to take some time before you can actually
rest.
Lay down and sleep. What is, tell me what's going through your head
What are your characters thinking during this time before they settle into sleep? And are they just thinking to themselves, or are they talking to each other?
Hmm.
I think Egladora would like to talk to the group if people are, you know, sitting around at the campfire and not alone, clearly not wanting to be talked to. I think she would try to open up to them.
How?
Missoli's just sitting, going through their odd assortment of mechanical things, trying to see if anything looks like it could go together at some point.
So her focus is on, like, the little gears that you found, the metal ball that you found, and just, like, zoning in on your crafting.
I think Egladora is fixing up, like, rips in her frock and stuff from fighting, sewing with whatever natural stuff is around her. And she says, I just wanted to say to everybody, I didn't know that I would meet you, and I didn't know that we would travel together, but I'm so happy that I did. And I don't know if I can do this on my own. So, thank you. And she gets quiet again.
It was great when you threw fire on that guy.
You saw that?
Yeah, he burned up real good.
You hit him pretty hard and he exploded, so that was cool too.
Yeah, it was fun. I like that.
That all worked out.
Isolde's just looking back and forth between the two of them, remembering how when they first met, Isolde thought, these two are just perfect together.
So awkward.
Why is that? What's going on in her head? What does she know about Cleon?
A lot.
Because she showed up with Cleon.
Right, yes. Cleon and I sort of arrived together post meeting earlier, and Cleon pretty much spilled their life story to me. So I know a lot about them, despite Cleon not knowing as much about me in return. But I think I have a great sense of this sort of, like, ramshackle? Is that the right word? Like, the mindset being sort of all over the place, but, like, very focused at the same time. So yeah. When Egladora walked in the room that very first day and was also like, as you said, so awkward.
Yeah. Yeah, a little skittish, a little awkward, didn't know how to act.
The two of them are both so awkward.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Watching two people who are deeply awkward together is always entertaining.
Yeah, two awkward people bonding over a foxhole experience.
You love to see it.
You love to see it, folks.
Can never look away.
But yeah, Cleon and Isolde, like, they know. They spent a couple weeks together. Yeah, they know everyone. We know each other's basic life stories.
Mm.
Totally.
And sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to. Sorry. No, you go ahead. This is not important.
Well, what do you think about, what does Cleon think about the spire? I mean, his first entry into this ruin. Successful, by all intents or by all accounts. How is he feeling right now?
I think,
is he eager to go back in? Does he not want to go back
in? He definitely wants to go back in, because the person he's looking for, it seems like they are there. So he definitely wants to go back. But he's also really wants to recompense, what's her name?
Arena.
Arena.
For the lost Gorts.
Yeah, for the lost Gorts. Like, he really wants to make sure that she's paid back before anything else happens.
Now, why is that? Where does that come from?
That's something that he inherited from his father. It was this impulse towards justice, but like a very
fair
specific
play.
Take on fair play and justice. But it's at the core of everything he believes. And yeah, he got that from his dad.
What's his alignment?
Chaotic neutral.
Ah.
But see, it only appears that way to the outsider because it's like his particular philosophy really only makes sense to him. So to the outsider, it seems like, oh, this is just random nonsense. But to him, it's like
there's a very specific order to what's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
What about Brother Mordecai? What's he thinking?
He's just sitting on a stump and polishing his armor and rancer to wipe away the blood of the goblins and have everything look spotless and pristine. And just not really thinking of too much. He's not at all perturbed or shook by the letter that mentions him. He's just kind of sitting there going through his rituals.
Keeping his mind clear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You pass through the night, shockingly without incident, in such a horrible place. And as dawn arrives, you find yourselves rested, recovered. Your spells are back. Your hit points are back thanks to your work the night before. And you awake and start packing up camp and continue, I'm assuming, to head to Arenas. You head back out to the path, and it's not there. At least the path that was there.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry, the path in the way that it was.
Damn it.
It looks exactly like it did your first pass through.
Oh.
So it's not as wide.
Oh.
It's a small game trail in a densely crowded wood, but it was right here where you fought the skeletons. And it was a wide path built for a cart with plenty of clearing on either side. And it's right where that was, is this path exactly like it was the first time 2 days ago now.
You know what this gives me? This gives me like Breath of the Wild when the red moon comes out and the dead come back to life. Mm-hmm. So the landscape's like completely the same, but all enemies that you've killed before come back to life in the areas that they were in.
That's what I was wondering, if it was a time of day thing.
Yeah.
It was dusk, if you remember.
Yeah.
And the skeletons were out, and typically undead is like a nighttime thing sometimes. Hmm.
Well, according to the Thriller video...
Does Cleon say that out loud?
He does. Again, seemingly random. And yet...
So now we're reoriented then.
So now as the sun rises and you get your orientation to know that you need to head north, was it northeast, I believe? Yeah, heading northeast. You feel like it's familiar again, and you're back to where you needed to be. There seemed to be some blip on the radar at the end of yesterday that was a little concerning, but now you're feeling comfortable. And after not too long of a time, just... moving through the woods together, you come once again to the calm little cottage of Arena Hollysong.
Yeah.
You only had to travel about an hour and a half to get here. If you guys got up and running by 7:30, something like that, 8 o'clock, then, you know, it's mid-morning, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, something like that. And you arrive
at
the
door. You don't have to shower or brush your teeth or anything. Get up and leave.
Just get up and go. Yeah. Everybody just stinks. That's the way it is.
True adventure.
Okay. You approach Arena's cottage. Knock, knock, knock. And she comes to the door. Opens it up. A smile on her face. Happy to see you. Excited, in fact, that you may have... She can even see the lockbox in your hands. She's like, "Oh, good morning to you. Please come on in. Come on in, dearies." And she steps back and gives you access to her little cottage. It is not too hot yet. You know that if the day is going to be anything like yesterday, it's going to slowly rise to a pretty sweltering heat. But right now, it's pretty bearable. She lets you... she leads you into the cottage, and she can see... Who's carrying it? Is it Mordecai carrying it?
Hello.
She sees Mordecai walking with it. She says, "I had a feeling you wouldn't have any trouble finding it, dearie. Where were they? Where were the goblins?"
"They were in the first level of the spire that we walked into."
"Oh, they were all the way at the spire itself?"
"Yes, they seem to have made camp inside of it."
"In the ruins, you mean?"
"Yes."
"In the tower."
"Yeah, they were all filled up inside there. We found your gourds."
"Oh, that's oddly out of character. Oh, you found the gourds, did you?"
"Yeah, they were ruined, though, so..." And he, like, fishes in his pocket. He's like, "Here, I think this should about cover it. I'm sorry we couldn't actually get the gourds back."
She awkwardly holds her hand out. She's like, "What is this?" It's like an elbow joint.
"Oh, shit. She's..." "No, that's like, not what I meant to give you. Hold on."
She's like, "This... I'm sorry, dear. I don't understand. What is this?"
"I think we didn't... we appraised that, and it should be roughly the equivalent cost of... It was stuff that we found lying around. There was this thing that was moving, but it wasn't alive. I don't know. How do you describe those things?"
"Arena, we fought something that I've never seen before. It was green, like the forest, like glowing green, and it was big. And it was controlled by... Soli? What?
I'm beyond my skills, but it seemed that our goblin friend may have been controlling it.
A goblin was controlling it. And she's, like, lightly rubbing the metal with her thumb, trying to piece together, understand where it's from.
I don't know what it was this was part of, but I'm not particular. I don't need it for payment for the gourds, Cleon. It's all right. If you feel like it'll give you some value, you take it.
No.
You need it more than I.
I can't take that. That's yours. I couldn't get your gourd. I couldn't get your gourds.
And she sees this look of, like, fierce determination in your face. She just says,
well, thank you very much, Cleon. I appreciate it.
It kind of relaxes a little bit.
She takes it back, walks into her kitchen, sets it down.
Please, everyone, sit down. Sit down. You've earned your reward, and I'd love to give it to you. Brother Mordecai, may I have the box?
Yes.
She takes the box from him, and she goes into this little kind of end table thing that she has by one of the seats in her little cottage. She opens it up, and she pulls out this little, like, what looks like... it looks like a broken stick, basically, is what it looks like. A small broken stick. It would basically be indistinguishable from a random stick that you would see, like, littering the forest floor. She takes this stick, and she just touches it to the side of the box and holds it there for a moment, another moment, and then all of a sudden you start to see this purplish glow come about at the end of the stick where it meets the box. It starts to glow in this little area around the box, too, where the stick is touching, and then suddenly, impossibly, the stick is like, sloop! And it goes into the box, a small distance, maybe half an inch, but you just see it go swoop into the box, and then you hear this audible click, and then a blue, like purplish, bluish light just all around the outsides of it. So now you see a seam in this little lockbox, and she pulls the stick out, puts it back where it was. It's completely mundane. The purplish sort of glow goes away, and she opens up a box. This box and peers in at its contents. As she opens the box, Isolde and Eglidora in particular, you feel the presence of powerful magic as soon as the thing opens. It's you can feel it kind of washing over you, and you just know that there's powerful magic coming out of there. Even Mordecai and Cleon, you guys can almost, like with the spire, you can feel like a tingle in your skin. There's a maybe like if it's super, super hot out on like the roof of a car, right? Like you get those waves of heat.
Yeah.
You can see like there's a slight wave of magical energy that has no color, but it's just distorting your vision a little bit around the box, shimmering, emanating out of it.
Is it Marcellus Wallace's soul?
Yes. Yes, that's the exact vibe.
It's Elvis's suit from True Romance.
Yeah. It's a big, big, big white light shining up under her chin.
Is that what I think it is?
She looks at you and nods.
Are we happy?
Are we happy?
Vincent.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
She looks in at the contents of the box and simply, ah, lovely. Her eyes come up and meet yours. It's all here. Well, a promise is a promise. She starts picking through, and you can hear ting 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 as these items are moving around. I have no doubt that these trinkets will be of some great use to you all, especially if you decide to go back. I wasn't sure you'd make it here in the first place if you got that far, but I'm glad to see you made it. And not too worse for the wear, either. And she's now not looking at you, but rummaging through the box. And she says, ah, here we go. And she pulls out a wad of sticks. Not sticks like the forest floor, but these sort of long, wide, yellowish sticks. She pulls them out and holds them out for somebody to grab them. And her face does not look up. She just holds them out towards you guys, and her face is still in the box as she just says, sunrods, dears. Sunrise.
Oh, cool. Oh. Nice.
And holds them out to you.
I take them.
And who's that, Eglidora?
Yeah.
Eglidora takes them. She says, ah, and this one I've had for quite some time. Never quite found the right time to use it, though. And she pulls out what appears to be on a length of leather, almost like a necklace, kind of. She pulls out it looks like a canine tooth. And you can see after a moment that it's the fang of a wolf.
Ooh,
and it's wrapped in simple leather straps that wrap it together, and then into this longer part that lets it hang. A wolf fang talisman, she says. Ooh. Good for kicking them when they're down. And this, again, mischievous light comes into her eyes. She passes this off, obviously, to Cleon, or Mordecai just kind of hovers it out there. Do either of you take it?
I look at Cleon as, like, just shrugs.
I take it and just hand it to Cleon.
Okay. So Sully grabs it. What are you thinking, Cleon? Just gives it to Cleon.
Like, all right. Thanks.
She then draws,
I knew that'd be a hard choice for you to make.
She then draws out a small vial, maybe 2 inches long, about a half an inch wide. This very small vial with a little stopper on it and a viscous yellow fluid inside. She said, holds it up to the light. She looks at it. She's like, and this should be the cat's eye elixir, I believe. She passes off the cat's eye elixir to whoever would like to take it. And then finally, sorry. And then Sully takes it as well. Being the resident alchemist.
I like things in little bottles, I suppose.
Amateur alchemist. And then finally, and then she draws out of this box a feather. A beautiful feather.
Oh, feather token.
It's come from a bird. This feather token, she says. Yes, Cleon. Yeah. Very good. A holly bush. It will give you some cover from prying eyes. And it has some delicious berries as well. And she winks and hands you this feather, Egaladora.
I take it.
You take it. She goes to close the box and holds for a minute. As you all are looking at it, Egaladora and Isolde, the powerful magic that you felt emanating off of this thing has not been dispersed around the room. The powerful magic is still contained within that box. It has never left the box. The rest of you, Cleon and Mordecai, you still feel that energy and you feel it coming from the box. You don't feel it in the wolf fang talisman in your hand. And as you're all sort of drawn to that energy and staring at the box, snap, it shuts. Your eyes scan up to see her looking right at you. Well, thank you very much. I wish you the best of luck on your journey. I shall pray for you. I shall pray that the forest lets you pass without too much trouble. And she just stands up, walks the box out of the room, sets it into a little side kind of bedroom, you think, where a bedchamber where she sleeps, and comes back out. Well, if that's all, then I'd like to see you out. Let's go.
Arena.
Chop, chop.
I do have a question.
Yes, Egaladora.
On our way back, I was following the path, and I was sure that I was going the right direction because I saw this really big rock, and I know the forest, and I was like, okay, there's that really big rock. And then on the way back, I saw it again, but it was in the wrong place. And then we tried to go the right way, and then we got really confused, and we were on a different path, even though I know we didn't change direction. And I'm wondering, is there something going on with the forest in the area that would make me confused? Or?
It seems you've... But it seems you've been found by some of our friends here. Here, sit down, sit down. She sits down. Her demeanor is a little bit more serious. Her brow furrows a little bit. Well, my dear, this is a classic example of fey interference in our lives. They're toying with you, you see. It's their way. Now, a lot of times what they're trying to do is lead you into some great evil so that they can laugh while you die in front of their faces, or so that they can laugh while you're simply hurt. It's a terrible thing, really, and I wish it didn't happen here, but they're hard to track. They're hard to find. The problem with something like that is that they're targeting you for something. Couldn't say what it is, but if they're changing the way a path looks or the placement of a rock or something like that, it usually means they're trying to lead you somewhere. Where it is could lead to great knowledge. It could also lead to horrible danger. It's not something you can ever trust, you understand, but it's also something you have to realize that if used well, it could help you. It's seldom black and white with fae. They're very clever and very tricky.
At the initial description of the fae's capriciousness and cruelty, Cleon's eyes start twitching.
Cleon,
What's the matter, dear? You have the same look as when I mentioned the gourds.
Yeah, that's not good.
No, it's not. It's extremely irresponsible and very, very rude, I'd say.
I'm going to find him.
The Fae you're going to find.
Yeah, I'm going to find him.
Well, keep your eye out for signs like that. If you see something you know was one way, and then it's changed, it's probably the Fae reaching out to say, this way. And whether it works out for you or not remains to be seen, but follow that path.
It's nicer ways to tell people how to go. Just saying.
I agree. I agree, but they don't think like you and me. They don't speak like you and me. They live very different lives. And keep in mind, they're not all bad. They're not all bad, Cleon. Now don't go on a crazy murderous rampage through my wood.
Still twitching. I'm still twitching.
We did run into some trouble on the way back as well. Do these symbols mean anything to you? And I'm just going to kind of gesture to Cleon for the skull that he has.
Hold on, oh, skull.
Yeah. Oh, the crown skull. I've heard reports of this, but I haven't seen it myself. It seems I have some friends here in the forest to keep an eye on things for me. And they let me know if something's amiss. I've heard of this, but it's been very rare as of late. Did they happen to coincide, this strange new path and then these undead?
Yes.
Well, it could be a coincidence, aye. But it could also be something that was meant to be together, but I'm not sure exactly why. I don't know who they are. I don't know what the crown skull symbolizes, but I will tell you that there's been some undead going through here with this symbol. And not just skeletons either. That's all I know right now. I didn't think it was enough of a problem to delve into. It's a random sort of report I heard, and I thought that maybe, again, it could be the Fae messing with us, and maybe it is. Maybe that's all it is, trying to get you to follow some line of logic that doesn't exist, but I don't know for sure. How did they fight? Did they fight well? Were they strong?
No.
No?
No. I made at least two, perhaps three of them burst with my bare hands.
Were they intelligent?
Barely.
Their minds were empty.
They also weren't weak, so let's not. I mean,
yeah, they almost killed Igaladora. Like,
well,
and me.
Okay.
She was hiding in a bush. They still almost killed her.
I did come out of the. I was fighting pretty good.
Did they?
She did great, but I mean, she almost died, and so did I. So,
yes, I'm afraid that'll be a common theme here in the wood. Almost dying, that is.
And she smiles, eyes light up.
If there's any other questions I could answer for you, I'd be happy to, but it seems you're being welcomed in to Echo Wood with all the bells and whistles that she has for you.
One more thing. Does this mask mean anything to you? And I show her Skizzard's mask. And I just want to know if there's, like, if I put it on, or if somebody puts it on, would there be some crazy evil seeping into us or something?
She says, ah, let me see it, my dear.
And give it to her.
She takes it in her hands. She puts her hand over it and tries to feel for some magical energy. Doesn't feel anything. Looks down at it and she's like,
well, it's not holding any dangerous magic I can feel. I don't see any problem putting it over your face. And you're sure? Where did you say you got this?
This was on a goblin who made the emerald, the metal emerald one.
You didn't pull this off of one of the skeletons you broke there in the forest?
No.
Well, it's got your same symbol on it.
Oh, that's
and
what
she
that
hands
is.
It back to you.
Oh.
And now, knowing it, looking, you can see that it's the crown skull, but it's mostly faded away.
That's what you couldn't see before.
Yeah.
On the inside of the mask that he was wearing.
Do we think that he is the one that made... Was he a necromancer or was he an alchemist?
I don't know.
When we found alchemical tools, I felt like it was... Maybe he just pilfered it, or somebody else pilfered it and gave it to him.
Or maybe they're both belong to guys that... Yeah. Whoever, like the K who wrote the note.
Right.
Maybe it's that
person. Yeah, maybe he's just a cog in the bigger wheel.
Oh, yeah, it did say in that note, I know what you think, what you think you found, but in the hands of one as incompetent as you, it will remain little more than a child's toy. So that could be the mask.
Should we tell Arena about the note?
That's up to.
Arena, I did find this note on the body of the goblin in question here. Take a look.
She takes the note, reads it.
It means nothing to me. I've never heard the name Skizzards before.
He's dead.
And this...
I took his mask.
And this toy... It was... What? You think the skull?
Oh, no, we thought
the
it was
face
the...
mask.
Yeah, we thought it was the box.
I thought it was that machine guy. Personally.
The Emerald Automaton.
It is unclear, clearly.
The thing he gave me the piece of was the toy the Skullman was working on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was a part of that thing. Yeah.
That sounds like a toy, though. The mask could be as well. She hands it back. I'm sorry, I can't be more help with that. I don't know.
Well, it was lovely seeing you.
And she stands up.
Do you know any evil necromancers whose first name begins with K?
I don't, I'm afraid. No.
All right.
But if you find out, will you let me know?
Yep.
Right. Seems as if you have another appointment.
Wish us another wish us luck out there.
Get out of your head.
You're not going to offer us any food.
We'll get back into the forest where we almost died by skeletons.
Or tea or
plus four rancers.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you make it, well, what have you found so far in the ruins, as far as the spire itself goes? And you found the goblins camped out there, but did you find anything else of interest beyond the goblins?
Well, there was like a central pillar in the middle of it that was like glowing a little bit. And it was sort of a different make than the sort of glassy kind of thing in the walls around it. It was more solid, like stone.
Yes. Yes, Cleon, it was. Very good. Very good. I'd like you to look a little deeper into it, if you would. And I mean that literally. I'd like you to... follow the stairs down into the cellars beneath the ruins.
Why?
Have you prepared that better?
Because I'd like to see if you survive it.
Eglodora is uncomfortable. Arena freaks her out. She thought she would be very comforting to a girl who like left her family, and her mom made it seem like this wild woods woman would help her. And Eglodora is like, this lady is just as freaky as the skeletons, as the people in the tower. Like, she doesn't really trust her.
Hmm. Yeah. This is some over-the-garden-wall shit.
Yeah.
She is, to use your words, a wild woods woman.
She definitely is.
Yeah, she's... Well, if you're going to go down, explore the cellars beneath the ruins, you might find a thing or two that would be of interest to me. If you go down there and you make your way back out, let me know, and we can talk again. Mm. It's as simple as this, my dears. I wish to help you. I truly do. But there is only so much that I can do with people I don't know. And if I don't know what you are and are not going to survive in the spire, I can't simply put all this energy into something that's going to end up with you dying the second you walk down there. Now, if you go down there and come back out alive, I'll have a few questions for you. If you can answer my questions, maybe it'll help you some more. But right now, I'm afraid, as you said, Brother Mordecai, I do have an appointment. And as much as you all have your reasons for going into the spire, and I don't ask you about those, I also have my business with the wood. There's important happenings occurring across here, and now I already have this alarming report that these crowned skull undead are real. And so I'd like to look into that further, among other things. The work that I have to do to maintain the balance of this forest is beyond what you would understand at this time. But you work your way into the cellar and find your way back, and we'll talk more. All right?
Well, we will surely put our lives at risk for the promise of more sunrods and one-time bonuses to our flat checks to find hidden creatures.
Ah, yes. Well, you touched right on it, Brother Mordecai. Why would I give you anything of value if you'll simply go in and die?
Eglodora elbows Mordecai in the armor and then is like, ow, ow.
I caught my elbow on a splint.
Your utter lack of appreciation is not does not go unnoticed.
Thank you, Orina. Okay, we're leaving.
Don't forget the sunrods.
I have them in my hand. Let's leave.
And she reaches out and grabs you, Mordecai, and she sort of bends down and looks right in your eye. She's like,
but it isn't politeness I'm looking for. I need you to survive. I don't care what you think about what I've given you. If you survive, I'll give you more.
And then she pushes you out the door. Really, really hardly, so that you fall. No, I'm just kidding.
She's so strong.
But no, you can sense that she doesn't care about your attitude.
Right.
She has bigger fish to fry. And she is interested in the fact that you went in there, killed a bunch of goblins, and made it out alive. It's a good start. But there's a lot more to the spire than a bunch of goblins camped out outside fighting over scraps of food and stupid trinkets. Unless anybody has any other specific questions, that would be it.
Let's go back to the spire.
Back to the spire.
Back to the spire.
Watching for strange changes in the terrain as
yes.
we go.
Yes, this time you start also, moving through.
Sorry. When they start leaving, Cleon lingers a little bit and he's just like staring at the door.
Okay.
He's just like staring.
Hmm.
At the closed door?
Yeah.
At her door?
Yeah.
I'll stay and watch you.
Watch him watching the door?
Yeah.
And but who watches you?
I don't
watch
know.
Him
oh,
watch
no. Doesn't watch me. Anybody?
I go to the door, watches, looks back and watches and goes, what are you doing?
Yeah. And he's like, he's like flexing his fists and he like kind of like turns around, bent over and like kind of like skulks back towards you guys.
Okay.
He's not a very good host.
You guys start making your way back south toward the spire. You got the whole day ahead of you. And the time passes pretty uneventfully. You are you move 3 hours, 3+ hours, all the way back to the opening at the clearing. And you don't see any sort of changes in the landscape. Everything is normal, the way that it was supposed to be. And you get to where, you know, the ruins are, and how do you want to approach? Now that you know a little bit more about the whole layout, you have to figure out how you're going to approach here again.
Not the front door.
Why? Because we tripped that one time?
Let's walk to one of the paths.
Yeah, Zach, can we take
the side or the back?
Can we take the back path leading up to the curtain? That seems like might be the easiest.
Secret entrance?
Yeah,
and we can see if the goblin bodies have been disturbed.
Yeah.
Mm, good idea.
Also, for returning Arena's lockbox, do we gain a hero point?
That is correct.
Oh!
Yes, you do.
Our first hero point.
My my roll 20 had shut down.
Oh, well. Your first hero point, okay. Yes.
You mean your first.
Oh, wait, no, I had one.
You did not have one.
Oh, never mind. Hero Lab lied.
Oh, wait. No, you don't use Hero Lab for that.
Oh.
We don't get one automatically at the start of the day.
No.
Okay.
You do not get one automatically at the start of the day.
Okay.
It should be Cleon, Mordecai, and Asoli should each have two, and Eglodora should have one.
Okay.
So I did not get one from the Power Beyond, because we haven't figured out what that is yet.
The Power Beyond. Oh, right. Yeah.
The doors.
Yeah. You're very close to figuring it out, okay. But you have not yet.
Got it.
What is that quest? I don't think people know what that quest is. What does it say?
That quest, folks, let me tell you. This is a new one. It says, Eglodora sends powerful magic behind the double doors to the east. Hesitant to open the doors without further exploration, the group decide to clear out a few more rooms. When Eglodora detected the magical force again, it was beyond the double door to the west. Apparently, both sets of doors open to the same powerful force from opposite sides. What could manifest such a powerful magical signature?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you have, I mean, the evidence is in front of you. You just haven't been able to correctly analyze it yet and say what this is. Now, I'm not going to be looking for you to complete this stage of the quest. You do not have to have all the answers, but you will soon have more, should you live. So, yeah, that quest not quite yet, but Arena's lockbox is complete.
Ooh. I have another one called The Path Below. Find an entrance to a subterranean level below the Wizard's Tower.
Yeah.
That might not be.
Yeah, you're not quite there yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see the stairs.
I don't want to get all these hero points because you've got to spend all of them.
I know.
Better off burning them.
Exactly. That's the way the economy is supposed to be.
Yeah.
You're better off burning them.
So they're gone at the end of the day. When we wake up, they're gone. Is that the deal?
No, we hold on to them.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, we just don't get a new one each session.
Right. Oh, right. Okay.
So you, so you wanted to go to the eastern entrance, the hidden entrance that was in the back where the bodies were piled?
Yes.
Before we go in there, let's go over the items that you got. I'm assuming, Troy, you looked these up.
Yeah, I looked up the Cat's Eye Elixir. I think it gives you it reduces your flat check to 5 to find a hidden creature.
Yeah, so the Cat's Eye Elixir essentially, if a creature is hidden from you, and hidden means 50% mischance, it changes it to 20% mischance. It changes 20% mischances to no mischance. So if something is concealed, it has no flat check. And then you had the Wolf Fang Talisman, which allows you to do bludgeoning damage equal to your strength modifier on a trip attempt. So if you trip someone, you add your strength bonus to, and you deal damage on the trip.
Okay.
And then the what does the feather token holly bush do?
I didn't even look it up yet. I was looking at the sunrod.
Eglodora.
Sorry. When this feather is activated, it immediately transforms into a living holly bush, filling a single square. This bush can provide standard cover. In addition, this bush has 2d4 bright red berries. While holly berries are usually poisonous, these berries are infused with beneficial magic. You can pick and eat a berry as an interact action to recover 1 hit point. Once plucked from the bush, a berry becomes non-magical after a few seconds. Okay, so you have to eat it immediately.
You just basically plant it and eat it.
Yeah.
You can't carry them around the same way that you can with a good berry.
And then if activated on soil, the plant continues to grow and thrive, although it doesn't produce any more berries. If activated elsewhere, it withers and dies within 1d4 days.
Okay.
So you can only use it once.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a consumable. Same thing with the Wolf Fang.
Second edition is full of these weird little tokens, one-time use magic items.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these low-level consumables that do all kinds of weird little things.
That's fun. There's a lot of different feather tokens. That's interesting.
Yeah.
There's a bunch. Knowing her experience with the woods and the natural world, the Wolf Fang and the Holly Bush were ones that she had on hand. All right, so you head back through the entrance that you had gone in before, going up, and then you find yourself looking at that stiff curtain. You push through it and walk back into and up that small flight of steps, and you find yourselves outside of the bedroom and the room with where you fought Skizzerts and the Emerald Automaton.
Mm-hmm.
To your left is the barracks, and straight ahead of you is this magical column with stairs going up. But do you do?
Do we want to go up or down?
I suppose we should go down. Unless we think... up feels like it's going to be something difficult. More difficult than if going down.
Although, I don't know. Because up, we know... How tall is the spire?
It's about maybe 40 or 50 feet.
I feel like there's a definite limit to how much...
I'm sorry, 60 feet. It's 60 feet tall.
Yeah.
From the outside, you could see it, eyeball it, about 60 feet tall.
So there might be two levels above us.
I feel like there's a definite limit.
In theory, there's an end, yeah.
Yeah, there's a definite limit to if we go up. We have no idea how many, levels there are down, so...
Do we want to go up first?
I kind of want to go up first, but...
I'm down with that because I don't trust Arena.
Yeah, now I definitely don't trust her.
God, why was she so creepy?
She was unnecessarily mean. We found her lockbox.
Do you think it was her? Or do you think it was Joe? Was Joe being creepy or was it Arena?
Well, Joe
is creepy.
Yeah, just pretty creepy.
We're ignoring you.
She might have been upset about the gourds and just not saying.
Yeah.
Let's go up. Down to go up.
Where do these stairs go?
Who's going up? And what's the order?
I will gladly go second.
I'll go. Cleon, Cleon will take the lead.
I will go third.
And I'm going to go with Cleon as per usual.
Stay behind me. Please.
Always.
Everyone be ready. We should figure out the CR of every encounter before forging ahead.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. We kind of ran into this in Skid's game, where it was like all open world. And the first thing that we decided to do was just so, we were so under-leveled for it. Like, if it was a video game, you'd just be like, all right, just load a previous save. We clearly were not meant to go this way. Yeah. In fact, you had mentioned earlier Zelda. Breath of the Wild.
Oh, yeah.
I did that so many times in Breath of the Wild. I would just be like, whoop, okay, not supposed to be in this part yet.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Turn around, run.
You get hit once by a monster, you're down to half a heart, and you're like, well, goodbye.
Yeah. For Skyrim, too. Like, yes. Oblivion was one of the first games I remember doing that, where it truly was open world, and you could wander into an area where you...
Oblivion?
Yeah.
They didn't scale the enemies for, like...
No, you could wander into like a hag's lair and just be out of luck and die.
Yeah, there was scaling, but there was still like some places that were just...
Like the set locations.
Yeah.
They could just get caves to them and stuff like that.
Mostly because they were quest related. If you wandered into somewhere where it was like a big quest, you could still fight everybody for some reason. Yeah, I love open world games.
Yeah.
The best. The best.
They're the best.
You guys start walking up these stairs. Cleon in the lead, Mordecai behind him. Eglodora and then... Isoli. You're wrapping around, and as you go, you can feel like that energy is just wafting off this central column. You make your way up, and you know you've gone up 20 feet, and you see an opening into an upper floor, and it's collapsed. And it might have been a doorway here or something like that, but it's broken away and it's just rubble, completely impassable. You follow this central column and it seems to thin a little bit, as if it's coming to a point as you get higher. And now you're starting to close in on what might be. I mean, you keep going past what should be another floor, but there's nothing there. And then you get up to what has to be the end of the stairwell, and sure enough, you come around one of these corners. Now, give me the light situation, because Cleon can't see.
I have, again, cast...
Oh, I'm sorry. This central column is emanating a green glow, so you can definitely see within the 5 feet of the width of these stairs. So you're totally fine. You get up there, and as you get to the top, you come around a corner, and you just see a door. A solid oak door with an arrow slit in the middle of it, but it's shuttered. You can't see beyond it. And that's it. Just kind of an unremarkable door that looked like it was, you know, it looks like a classic door into an upper defensive chamber of a keep, where you would have an arrow slit in it for, you know, defensive purposes. You'd have the spiral staircase for defensive purposes, so that, you know, it's hard to attack up there. You fight going down. And it seems like the door is very old and has been here a long time, but it's closed. What do you do?
I'm going to listen at the door and check for traps.
Okay. What's your perception bonus?
Plus 6.
Plus 6. You listen. You don't hear anything. Look around for traps. Roll for initiative.
Oh, we're
going to do something here, which is, you know, very second edition. We're going to go into encounter mode, because what you do as you go to look for this trap, what everybody does matters second to second. Now, it could be that your character is like, I'm just going to wait to see what happens. You know what I mean? Not every encounter roll is a fight with some bad guy. It's just when every second counts. So we're moving from exploration mode into encounter mode. Roll initiative how you want to, depending on what exactly you were doing.
Roll.
There you go. We're still rolling for initiativo. So what did you get, Cleon?
25.
25?
Wow.
Yeah. Geez, Zam. Okay, who's next?
I got a 17.
Okay, Isoli?
I got a 16.
And it
is and I got a 12. So
and
great.
A 12. Yeah, yeah, look at that.
Round the horn.
Good job, nice. Team.
You guys did it. All right. Cleon, you come up. I already rolled this. You come up to check for traps. As you start to examine where the door is, you notice in your check for traps that the door is locked. Mm-hmm. But you don't see any traps. So that is an action.
Okay.
You have two actions. Two more actions. So you look, you don't see any traps.
It's locked.
And it's locked, you notice.
Yeah, at some point, weren't we going to go back to town to buy some lockpicks?
Oh, God, that's right. Oh, that's right. Do your shoddy tools, do they, would they...
I don't think my shoddy alchemist tools are useful in this situation. It's mostly like tubes. which you could try and shove in a keyhole, but...
I mean, yeah, people, you know, if you're creative, you can pick a lock with a test tube. I'm going to try to force the door.
You're going to try to force the door. So you look at it, you see that it's not... Whatever, yeah. And you attempt to force the door.
Yeah.
Okay, so do an athletics check.
Athletics. Ooh, natural 20.
Oh, whoa.
Natty 20. Yeah. No, critically succeed.
Hell yeah.
No wait, now, does no, it's not an attack. Never mind.
Well, can you, in second edition, can't you critically succeed on skill checks?
Yeah. So here's what happens. You go to force the door, right?
Yeah.
And or you see that there's no trap, and then you attempt to force the door. Cleon being such a freaking beast. Well, actually, you know what? I need to still double check if you even critically succeed. It's not automatic just because you rolled a natural 20.
It was a 27.
You sure? It doesn't work like attacks?
Yeah, natural 20. Well, no, a natural 20 is never a critical. It's not always a critical success.
Oh, I thought it was.
If it's a critical, if it's a miss, it would be a hit. It just moves it up one stage. So basically, I just needed to check the DC of the force open check. And it is a success. And since it's a natural 20, it bumps up one. 27 is not a crit success. It's a success. But a natural 20 bumps it up one.
Oh, nice.
So now it's a critical success.
Nice.
So you just... Boom! You bang this door open, and in so doing, you immediately, boom, hit into something extremely heavy as, onto the floor, but falling back, but yet keeping his feet multiple steps is a huge bow-wielding bugbear.
Oh,
that's just
no.
Like, blackout. We'll see you next time.
Oh! It's a bugbear.
It's a bugbear.
Wow.
Shit.
Echo Quest Super Dungeon is a Glass Cannon Network production of the Emerald Spire Super Dungeon. Paizo Pathfinder and their respective logos and all Paizo titles, characters, and artwork are property of Paizo Inc. and are used with permission. The Glass Cannon Network is an officially licensed partner of Paizo Inc.